you don't want policy to always be like retrospective. Like sometimes you can be progressive and like look into the future and futuristically sort of understand what is going to work better.
Hi, welcome to Conversations on Public Health. I'm your host Prachi. Join me every week as I travel across India, speaking to folks who are solving massive public health challenges facing our country and the larger developing world. Our episode today is a continuation of our previous conversation with Tanya. We discuss water, climate change, policy, accountability, and so much more.
Another key component of looking at the nutrition part was looking at things on water, sanitation, and hygiene. While I did not work too much on hygiene, a little bit more probably on sanitation I worked. But the maximum time I spent was on water. And one of my most keen discoveries was just how, you know, how water affects nutrition. You know, and in India, as we are becoming a more industrialized country, where centers are urbanizing, where our requirements for water are increasing, we are realizing that, you know, we are exposed to a lot more water contamination, which is not only bacteriological, it's also chemical in nature. So for instance, there is a lot of iron, there is fluoride, there is arsenic. All of these things combined have very severe implications for not only for nutrition, but also, like, you know, in terms of increasing the disease burden in the country. So I would say that I spent like quite a significant amount of time on also just exploring the water space and what is really happening over there.
Now, you mentioned that there's this link between water and malnourishment or water and nutrition. Can you please elaborate on that?
Yeah. You know, so again, like, you know, water, the conversation around water in India is also relatively new, right? I mean, we have had the National Rural Drinking Water Program in the past, but there is more literature emerging, there is more concern arising, simply because a lot of things that are happening in water are also like a matter of, they've happened over a period of time, and as our country has developed and the model of development we have chosen, right? So there are several factors that influence how the conversation on water is also coming about. Now, the thing is that over a period of time, you know, like I mentioned before, that as our water needs have been increasing, we have been boring deeper and deeper into the groundwater tables, right? Particularly in some states in central India, and then in the northeast of India, a lot of the contamination that exists in water, particularly the chemical contamination, is actually naturally occurring in many cases, right? It is just because the deeper we go into the ground, the water comes in contact with the granitic belt, and the more it stays in contact with that belt, the more likely it is, and the more intensely it gets contaminated with things such as fluoride. Right, in the northeast and in several other places, there are industrial effluents, like such as iron and arsenic also, for that matter, chloride, lots of these other different contaminants that also exist that could be caused because of industrial pollution. Now, how this affects nutrition is one, like I said, that, you know, it's a vicious cycle. So if you are malnourished, your immune system is lower, and you're more likely to fall sick due to bad quality of water, right? The other thing that bad quality of water does is that it reduces the ability of your body or your intestines to absorb the nutrition from the food that you're getting. So this is how it's a vicious cycle, right? So for instance, fluoride, there is emerging evidence to say that what fluoride does is that it erodes the walls of the intestines, and it reduces absorption of iron and calcium. And therefore, you'll see that in fluoride endemic areas in the country, the government has started these calcium and vitamin C supplementation programs where they provide them with like imli toffees and amla toffees, and they give them like calcium supplementation just so that they can overcome the harm that this fluoride intake water is doing to their bodies. So it is very closely connected. Yeah.
The point I want to understand here now is what is the government doing for something like, you know, water contamination? Because as I see it, these problems are only going to increase in the future.
Yeah, you know, like, you know, Prachi, the same conversation that we just had about nutrition and hunger is true for water also in many ways, right? Water, again, is like a precious, precious resource. A very political topic that rarely governments want to get into, because the question is that where is the water, you know? So if you talk about like, you know, some of the, like, you know, most, a lot of my experience on water is in Madhya Pradesh, so I can talk most about that. But, you know, there are areas in Madhya Pradesh that go through extended periods of drought. You know, and there is no water over there. And then if there is a water source and it is contaminated, then really, like, you know, I don't think that there is much of a choice over there. So I think like the first step is just ensuring access to water. Now, you know, there have been like several schemes in the past that have come about, like Har Ghar Jal, Har Ghar Nal, and then Har Ghar Jal and things like that. But, you know, the question still remains that are they really becoming a reality or not? Because the National Rural Drinking Water Mission also had these really ambitious targets of ensuring piped water supply within households by 2020, 100% coverage. And I remember like 3 years ago, I was looking at the numbers for some of the states, and in Uttar Pradesh, in rural Uttar Pradesh, the coverage of piped water schemes was 0.5%. That means only 0.5% of households have a source of water supply within their house. That to me was absolutely mind-boggling. And then what was mind-boggling is that, you know, we have set yet another ambitious target for ourselves, right? Like now, I think very recently there was again a national water mission which was launched. And again, the target for that, this was that, you know, there's going to be a tap in every household. The question still remains that how true the government is going to come on this promise, right? Because A, it is a tough promise. And B, like a lot of times what happens is that this just creates like a very, you know, negative sort of feedback loop into policy measures, in the sense that, you know, tomorrow if you go and install a tap in every household, you know, from the next budget onwards, drinking water or, you know, household level water is not going to be a priority for me, irrespective of whether those taps are actually functional or not. And therefore, we have to be very careful. And this is personally like just my experience, that we need to be, as policy makers, policy influencers, very cognizant of the targets that we are setting for ourselves, and not really making these targets like, you know, sound so larger than life that when we are not able to deliver on them, there is no other solution to it.
And what is accountability like, you know, with these programs?
It's the same, Prachi, like with any other government run program. I would say that what do you think is the accountability for a patient who walks into a primary healthcare center today? There is none, right? Because when you're coming from such low agency where you neither have money, you neither have influence. See, look at the people who are going to be actually availing public services, right? Look at that section of people. Those people are probably the poorest of the poor people. Because if my income was any better, I would go to a private service provider, because I would just not trust the government on some of this, right? So if you look at that section, you know, that section is not empowered enough to ask for accountability.
Okay, so I'd like to now quickly talk about, you know, what are the common themes between successful programs in the nutrition and water space. Give us some examples of stuff that has actually worked and, you know, change that's actually been made on the ground.
You know, I think like one of the better things that have happened while I have been working in this space is that there is a lot more cognizance of let's say how of not only looking at beneficiaries of public programs as beneficiaries, but sort of taking into account their life realities, right? So what I'm trying to say is that there is a shift from like a purely push type policy to actually moving towards understanding contexts better and trying to customize policy making according to that, right? So, you know, you will see that a lot more nutrition programs are now focused on getting people more aware and also empowering people a lot more, right? I mean, one of these programs that I very recently saw working in nutrition was on how women of the community were coming together and they were sort of taking up an unused piece of land and sort of cultivating that land with like different with different vegetables, and each woman was responsible for a portion of that piece of land, for irrigating it, cultivating it, etc. And then at the end of the sowing and whatever the agricultural cycle, when they get to harvesting actually those crops, they sort of do some exchange of crops, right? So like you take in basically a basket of diverse vegetables. Now these are all like really small incremental steps, right? Like there have been new innovations when it comes to supply chain. There is something called the Common Application Software that was rolled out a few years ago by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Dimagi. And basically what it intended to do was that equip every Anganwadi worker with a tablet in which she can capture what all products she has received, how much ration she has received, and how much she has distributed, etc. And this was all like in a centralized database. So all of these are well-intended steps. However, in terms of implementation, lessons have been so varied across states. Something has worked in some states, something has not worked in another. In Bihar, for instance, self-help groups have become so active. They have taken like agriculture over there has taken like a purely revolutionary sort of phase through self-help groups. How that eventually translates into nutrition is yet to be seen. But the point is that different solutions have worked in different contexts, and nutrition is one of those spaces where we are still trying to find better solutions. And which is what also increases the need to focus on this more urgently, right? Because there is a desperate need for innovative and better solutions. Having said that, I do think that, you know, it's better government priority now. It's greater government priority. There are more people talking about it. And therefore, it seems like we are on the right path.
Tell us, Tanya, do different states, do different you know, policymakers, do they talk to each other? Do they, you know, share results, share what works, what didn't work? Is there that kind of like, you know, a learning, you know, environment within the people who make these policies? Like between states, say, let's say like one state does well on a certain indicator, will they, is there any kind of like, you know, a desire to like figure out why it worked or what worked out there? Like,
you know, Prachi, I think the thing to really think about is that on paper, every state in the country would have a stellar policy design, would have like a stellar policy and a strategy to address malnutrition or any other problem for that matter. The real challenges come actually in implementation. So honestly, the variations that you will see will actually be across like states where they have been able to implement better versus where states they have not been able to implement better. So when you see like states such as UP and Bihar, these states are not constantly failing on their strategy. They're constantly failing on their implementation, right? And in contrast to other states, right, like let's say a Tamil Nadu, let's say an Andhra Pradesh, Sikkim for that matter, apparently in NFHS 5 has shown like great results on all three anthropometric measures. the point is that, you know, the stark difference over there is purely implementation. So if you have better accountability, you have better monitoring systems, you are definitely likely to see incremental improvement. But if you're not going to be focusing on those systems at all and just going to be doing things for the sake of it and for optics, then I guess it becomes a difficult story.
So to then quickly summarize our discussion today, well, nutrition is an invisible and large part of not just a public health program, but, you know, on a larger level as a society. It's something that we need to worry about, but we don't see it become as large a part of discussions as it really should be. That then policy needs to be context specific. And as you say, we're slowly getting there. Well, hope that's the one thing that, you know, we have with these programs.
Yes, yes, for sure. I mean, of course, we are learning and we are growing, you know, and I really hope, you know, but there are going to be bigger challenges to nutrition now going forward, Prachi, like, you know, with climate change becoming more of a reality. And I know, like, you know, everybody just keeps dropping climate change here and there. But I think the effects of it are now really visible, right? In our food chains, in agriculture cycles, in all of that, you know, like it's really visible that climate change is a reality. And therefore, you know, adapting to that is going to be a real challenge for a country like India, which has not been able to secure food for quite a large section of its society. You know, so there is hunger, then there is nutrition, and then there is adaptation of nutrition to your context.
So when you say climate change, then you talk about stuff like, you know, shifting, let's say, rainfall patterns, excessive flooding, drought.
Yes.
And they all relate to water.
They all relate to water. They, yes, I mean, irrigation is such a challenge. Yeah, like, I mean, just think of like water not being there. See, one is, yeah, like, I mean, water is again something that, like, you know, goes into probably every realm of life. And therefore, of course, it is critical. But it's also really, really critical that we start comprehensively looking at our approach to nutrition and not taking some of these aspects such as climate change lightly. You know, and really making them like active parts of nutrition narrative in the country before it's like too late. You know, you don't want policy to always be like retrospective. Like sometimes you can be progressive and like look into the future and futuristically sort of understand what is going to work better.
Tanya, now is as good a time as any to wrap this up. Thank you so much. You were insightful, you were informative, and it made for a very interesting conversation. It was a pleasure having you on the show.